Ever try to get into one of Advertising Week's amazing sessions and suddenly hear that the room is at capacity? Now you can still experience it in real time. Listen to that keynote or panel as a live audio stream in the Advertising Week app, powered by Live365. Advertising Week Radio features sessions, podcast clips, curated music, and more, both during the shows and year-round. Visit aw.live365.com for easy access instructions. Live365, the world's audio.
Welcome to Great Minds as we start to wind down season 5. And with us today is Sarah Mailer. Sarah is the CEO and founder of Left Field Lab. She lives in that space that intersects creativity and technology. She's got a phenomenal background. About a year ago, Left Field Labs became part of the Stagwell family. We're going to inevitably talk about our good friend David Sable, the vice chairman of Stagwell. We absolutely love David and love the space that Left Field Labs occupies. So a special thanks to Lily for putting us together. And Sarah, a hearty welcome here to Great Minds.
Thank you. It's a wonderful thing to be here with you.
Well, everybody says that at the beginning. We'll see what you say at the end. So, Sarah, I think we're both a little punch drunk today. So, Sarah, I want to go back to those early days when you were in school at UCLA and majoring in design and media. It meant very different things back then in the mid-90s to what it means today in 2024. Design, media, arts, a very different discipline going back. So I'd love to talk about what was going on at UCLA that constituted design, media, arts at that time, and sort of use, you know, your expertise and growth trajectory over 20 years as a creative technologist as a sort of filter for where we were and where we are now.
It's amazing to think back that this was 1997 that I started at UCLA, and think about what was happening there with technology. We were just getting email accounts. You know, we weren't yet used to websites as they are today. They were electronic brochures at that time. And the best thing that we had was CD-ROM design for, you know, media content. And so at this time, this program at UCLA afforded the ability to really think about how we as people engage with story in a new way that's nonlinear, in a way that has these infinite possibilities to experience in whatever direction and whatever pace we so desire. And I just fell in love immediately with that idea of limitless potential with how we engage with content. And so design for emerging technology was really looking at all the things from CG and motion to sound design to early development and coding. And, you know, when Flash was just a glimmer in our eye at the time, I mean, it really takes us way back. And thinking about those early technologies, really employing the practice of design theory, design thinking, and how we psychologically look at creating experiences for humans to feel compelled to engage more richly. And that's really what the foundation and the program still affords, which is to this day vibrant and continuing to do incredible work.
How much of the curricula do you think that was there when you were there is still there? Do you think they're hanging on to a lot of stuff that's no longer relevant? Or do you think that they have manage to change things, because the world has changed completely in that period of, you know, just north of 25 years.
Yeah. Well, what's beautiful about the UCLA design program is that it's still very much about theory and critical thinking, and that separates the art centers of the world from a program that is born from an academic institution where you can cross-pollinate and take classes in physics and English literature and really allow these disciplines to overlap and influence one another. So the basis of theory and really critical understanding of why does it work and engaging in deeper discussions. To this day, the program still is champion of that. And I think that that's rare in, you know, most academic institutions that have a design program to some degree allow for that, but this really cross-pollinates in a unique way. Speaking to how it's adapted over time with the changes in the world, what I'm seeing as an output from the program is these kids are so much more sophisticated than we were. In the late 90s, like we were just scratching the surface of what's possible. And these kids, we've hired a lot of them too, and they join Left Field Labs. And I'm blown away by their level of design thinking and their ability to execute. It's off the charts. So it's a testament to, I think, how the school continues to adapt.
Fantastic stuff. And I think it's, you know, it's so easy to think that things have always been like they are now. But the reality is the entire landscape that this business is built on has been discarded and rebuilt, very much a work in progress in a very short period of time. And I know that every age, going back the industrial age, or you know, going all the way back to the Renaissance, you know, in any given greatly defined period, there is change. But it feels like, certainly as it relates to our business, an awful lot has happened in a relatively short period of time.
So much has happened. And now I think the through line for me is that the tools change daily, weekly. It feels like hourly now with AI. And yet the practice and approach doesn't change. The way we think about the challenges, the constraints of a particular project or initiative, that does not change. So we have to have this ability to adapt very quickly to how we use the tools, but maintain best practices with how we approach the problem. And so that's a through line that I think is important to point out.
Great stuff. So one of the things that people talk about when they talk about you is that notion of creating firsts, and that going back to its founding, that Left Field Labs has been about sort of getting to places that people are going to get to eventually, but very often, Sarah, you get there first. Talk about where that comes from. Does that go back to your upbringing? Does that go back to, you know, something that you might have gotten, you know, in school or from a mentor? Talk about that notion of being first.
Yeah, I think it goes back to one of my first jobs, actually my first agency job, where I was for almost 5 years. And I felt like we got really good at being comfortable with the tools in hand and developing microsites and the occasional banner ad campaigns, but not really pushing the limits of what's possible. And that was one of the desires that I had in forming Left Field Labs was, I think there's bigger, better work we can do, and we can challenge ourselves to go beyond the comfort zones that we can get locked in. And a through line for us at Left Field Labs is that we want to be challenged positively. We want to be learning new things, and we want to be pushing the limits. So that's become almost a lens that they hire people. Are they really not just up for the challenge, but do they live and breathe that challenge? That's a very different mindset and makeup. So, you know, I think that that was the most formative, was that agency job and realizing that I'm of that mindset because I want to be building what's next. And we as a company, we don't want to be building what's already existed. We can, and we're great at it, but we really want to be focusing on building things the world's never seen before. And that's also been afforded by opportunities early days with Google. You know, oftentimes they would say to us, we don't care if it doesn't operate in other browsers, just do something the world's never seen and, you know, build it so that it just makes Chrome shine.
Okay, so I want to start to dive deeply into, you know, the engine room at Left Field Labs. But let's talk about the founding and go back to 2000, I think it was 2008. The decision to become a founder, and you're still at a very young age, barely 30, if 30. Talk about that decision to become a founder and, in effect, Sarah, to bet on yourself.
Wow. Yeah, I was 29. I had, you know, a pretty comfortable job. I was, even though I had a design degree, I was doing business development at an interactive agency. And I remember I had rented out a what I thought was going to be a painting studio in Venice Beach, just a few blocks from my apartment. And a friend of mine said, "You know, you have the space already. You might as well start your own company." And it echoed at, you know, many times in my, you know, in my career, I would say, "Yeah, I envision starting my own company at some point." And I almost would catch myself like, "Who said that? Was that me? Is that really what I want?" Having this space, though, really was the impetus to be able to say, I could try this out. And, you know, not having overhead yet, not really having, you know, the grander adult responsibilities at that time as a 29-year-old, I decided, you know, what's the problem with start trying it out? Like, let's experiment and see, and let's put this theory to the test. This theory was, can we do better work together when we create an environment that's based on mutual respect, admiration, and that desire to do bigger, challenging work around what's next? So that was the early vision. And I left that job and had a, you know, my car was paid for, had a bicycle, a laptop, and this little studio. And that was the beginning of Left Field Labs.
And what was the first moment, first client, first project where you could sort of have a little conversation with yourself and say, I think we might be onto something here?
Yeah, well, the first one was getting Disney as a client. And, you know, I had built a relationship with someone who ran a lot of the re-released content with Disney Buena Vista. And as soon as I opened the doors of Left Field, he said, "I want to work with you." And that became a year and a half relationship of building some pretty fun projects. And it wasn't, you know, the grandiose innovation work that we're known for today, but it sure gave us a foundation that was solid. And it made me realize that being able to cherry pick people that I really respect, admire their creativity, I know their work ethic, and they're going to get it done and deliver. And it allowed that space for us to begin. And just after about a year, we got our first project with LucasArts. And this was doing a big project for Star Wars, and it was a re-release or a released game for Battlefront Elite Squadron. And now I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, or wasn't at the time, but I learned so much about this, and, you know, deep dive into building the website and a teaser game and so many other components of this larger campaign. Things really started to accelerate at that point. And we were still bridging entertainment, working with Universal and Warner Brothers, as well as Disney. And then we were starting to then get into big tech. So at the very beginning of 2009, I moved the office from that little studio a couple blocks away, still in Venice. And I remember distinctly we were setting up our IKEA desks, still bootstrapped, and needed to borrow a screwdriver. Well, I went across the street, and it was a group of creatives that had formed their own agency. They were formerly Crispin Porter creative execs. And I asked to borrow a screwdriver, and we got to talk. And they said, "Oh, you do digital. Okay, we don't have digital, but we're pitching Google in a couple of weeks. Do you want to join?" And it was right place, right time. And we did a joint pitch, and I brought in a couple of my, you know, revered peers from the design department at UCLA, and we put together creative, and Google loved it. And then that marked our foray into big tech, and that is a whole other rabbit hole for discussion. So, and how we then focused on Google for a few years to come at that point.
Because you needed a screwdriver.
Because we needed a screwdriver, because we were bootstrapping and we needed to put together those IKEA desks.
I love that. I love that. And let's dial back a little bit and give us the, you and I meet in the lobby. I'm going to the 12th floor. You're going to the 14th floor. I ask you, tell me about Left Field Labs. Give me the elevator pitch.
Yeah, well, what I'll say to you in an elevator is that we're a creative technology company, and we're at that convergence of imagination and practical real-world application. And we want to build what's next. And what I'm particularly excited about is how we show up in a changing world. What you talked about earlier, that we live at a very different time right now than we did in the late 90s. We see how to disrupt systems in a way that's not just responding to, but delivering experiences that people desperately need and businesses and brands also need.
Love it. And go back to that initial project with Google and with the Crispin Porter refugees. Great pool of talent that shot produced. Very sad what happened to Crispin Porter Bogusky over time. I love still speak to Chuck and love him. Talk about that early project. What was it?
Yeah, this was to launch Google's first consumer device. So keep in mind, this was before Pixel, and they hadn't debuted a phone yet. Our task was to launch their very first phone, which was called the Nexus One. And this was, again, no consumer electronics yet. How does Google launch a device into the world where there is no physical retail brick and mortar to experience this? So part of our brief was, we want to create something that really has a visceral feel where people can engage with this new device, become comfortable that Google is behind this and excited, and really understand also what the, day in the life experience, how does it benefit you? And think about applications and simulating those. So at the time, this was like, what? We are tasked with a really major launch. We had, I think, just over 6 weeks to design and execute a website, all the application simulations, and a creative for the campaign. And it was a resounding success. At that point in time, we launched it, and I had envisioned something that would be a really playful nod to Google that would really speak to the creativity and the quirkiness of the brand, but also the tech savviness. And there, interestingly, some of my peers from UCLA had done a movie title sequence for the film Juno, which you may remember. And it had this really beautiful hand-illustrated effect. And I thought, that would be perfect. That would be an amazing way to show photorealistic device and also have fun with animated vignettes and show the story of how this phone can really benefit your life. And so we created a version of that. And this was adopted for years after our campaign and website. Google really embraced that look and feel. And we got calls from AdWords and from Chrome, from Fiber to and saying, hey, we saw what you did for Nexus One. Could you do that? We want that exact look and feel. And I'd say, well, actually, what you want is probably something a little different. Let's talk about that. You want your own look and feel. But it spoke to how well received it was.
That's a fantastic story. Where does the name come from, Left Field Labs?
Yeah, I think the expression out of left field for me has always had a positive connotation, and it's surprising, it's delightful, it's something that is completely unexpected. And I really love how that embraces what we do. And the fact that, we don't want to be building what has already existed, but we want to be surprising and delighting people. We want that element of unconvention to be present in our work. And the labs part speaks to that pragmatic or scientific approach and how we do the work. That is also, I think, a really important thing to know when you think about us, is that we're 50% imagination and we're 50% scientific real world approach. And we have to hold both of those almost in like an ambidexterity, and being able to do both of those simultaneously really well is also what separates us from a lot of our peers. We do both of those in tandem in a way that I just don't think is very commonplace.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I saw that specific language of creative technologist, what it harkened back to for me was years ago, I was on the board of the VCU Brand Center. As it turns out, Virginia Commonwealth University, largely due to the support from the Martin Agency, is the best graduate program in our industry in the country. And an old friend of mine, Rick Boyko, used to lead it, and it's now led by another friend, Van Graves. And I remember the board discussion when they were creating a creative technology track for the students. And this goes back, Sarah, probably close to 15 years. And as always at that school, they were ahead of their time, as were you. Talk about how the skill sets of your team have changed as technology has changed.
Gosh, you know, I wouldn't say that there's been fundamental shift in the skill sets. I would say it's been an acceleration of the abilities and the deeply thoughtful and retrospective and human understanding and an approach that's more scientifically based than maybe more intuitively. That's been a shift and an evolution. It hasn't been anything that's surprising, though, to me. I just think that we're able to do so much more than we were even 10 years ago. The beautiful thing about the evolution of the company and even my training way back and, you know, to those days at the design department at UCLA was that it set the stage for really what is here now. We were building AR and VR experiences at the very, very beginning, back with, you know, Google Cardboard. And, you know, before now we have, before we had access to some of the headset devices that we have today. And I think that the spirit of being able to hack technology, you know, hack things that haven't always been part of the tools in the toolbox. We continue to do that, but we have so much more significance in what we're able to do. So, yeah, I would just say it's kind of an amplification to answer your question.
Okay, very, very fair. About a year or so ago, you became part of a bigger family, the Stagwell family. And the Stagwell story is an incredible one in a different way. What Mark Penn, and brilliantly now also being led by our dear friend David Sable as vice chairman, but what Mark has done, the vision he had and the turnaround of what he did with what was the old MDC and is the new Stagwell, or let's call it new-ish at least, is a great story. A lot of great shops that were part of the old family. I love Christine and the team at Coley McVoy out of Minneapolis. But they've also made some very clever acquisitions, Left Field Labs being one of them.
Yeah, I think what we really share and saw immediately from Mark and from everyone in the early days as we were exploring this was the appetite to be disruptive, you know? And that, again, back to your question on the name, it's such a perfect alignment with who we are, you know, and the fact that we want to be building what's next. We want to build transformative experiences that stop people in their tracks, that change the convention, that change the protocol and status quo, and get us thinking about better ways to do this, better ways to engage. And when I talk about this, it's important, you know, it's not just brand to consumer anymore or audience. These are richer dialogues, two-way conversations. It's now amplified by community in a way that wasn't as accessible just 5 years ago. And now brands are engaging in a much more rich and meaningful way there. So that was really clear that, you know, that alignment had to be present for us to do our best work and for it to be a good fit within the Stagwell network.
Fantastic stuff. I know you've also been personally active in a lot of different causes and issues and movements, sustainability being one of them, and the Women's Earth Alliance. Can we talk a little bit about how you came to that? And I know that there's a bigger commitment from Left Field on issues that transcend the business, that humanity piece. So I'd love to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, social impact and environmental impact are near and dear to us. And how I came about that, I think, was in my early readings and reflections of Buckminster Fuller. And something really struck me was that we live at a time right now, in particular in 2024, where technology can really be a saving grace to the trajectory that we see humanity in. And it's how we as humans use technology wisely. And it can either, really lead to more dystopian outcomes, which we have a whole decade plus of experience witnessing, or we can use it for greater good. And I think when I became a parent 11 years ago, it was very important to me that we really do use this time and privilege that we have as creative technologists and the influence that we have with the companies that we work with to do something that's not just going to move the needle a little bit, but to really change perception and drive deep behavioral change. So, working and supporting the Women's Earth Alliance is one. I've also been deeply involved with the Pachamama Alliance. They do amazing work in the Amazon rainforest and really looking at how can technology bring about new systems? How can we disrupt the old broken systems and really reinvent and create new systems that have that mutual benefit that are going to be win-win-win, win for brand, win for audiences, and win for global communities. So that's, and not to mention the planet. That's actually one of the more important things at this time, isn't it?
It certainly is. So, as you look in your crystal ball, we're having this conversation again, Sarah, a year from now. What do you think we're talking about that we didn't touch on today?
Well, I would love to be talking about an initiative that's tech enabled and AI enabled for greater good that has a deep impact on the environment and changes the way brands and organizations can participate in environmental, social, governance projects. This may be, altruistic, but that's me practicing altruism because we need to hold that space for all possibilities and greater positive influence. So I would love to say in a year from now, we're talking about that. We're talking about the impact that we're also ushering in, not just with and for our own network, but with our companies, our clients and partners.
Fantastic stuff. And lastly, being part of a big family is something we've been through also when Advertising Week joined the Emerald family a couple years ago. Talk about what has been great about the acquisition for you and what has been surprising and perhaps a little challenging. And I'm happy to answer also, but as a fellow founder who sold, I'd love to get your vantage point and take on that without trying to put you in hot water anywhere.
No, it's great. I love the question. It's been, truth be told, very like all great. It really has been where we have autonomy to do what we feel is right by our clients and in the pursuit of the best possible outcomes. But we also have that mixture of support. And that's something that we hadn't had. So the company turned 17 at Left Field Labs. We turned 17 years old. So we're older than the network. And we have, practiced over years a particular time or particular science and art of how we go about this and how we develop our relationships. And to Stagwell's credit, we really have that autonomy. And yet we also have the support and lift in the ways that we've needed. We've been, the rogue operators punching well above our weight class year after year, project after project, with our biggest clients. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, we have four big tech clients, and we're constantly pitching and in many cases winning work that are, competing agencies that are 10 times our size, and that's an amazing thing to be able to do that. Well, having some support now from our agency peers for collaborating, as well as from the network, has been everything that we'd hoped for. I think what's been surprising or different is just navigating now having access with these sister companies. Eagerness for us to collaborate has maybe been tempered by practicality of learning exactly how we're different and, maybe not immediately having access to what the core capabilities and exactly how we do things differently. But we're getting a better understanding of that now, a year in. And I think timing is probably just perfect because I think 2025 we're going to be seeing a lot more of collaborating. So.
Yeah, well, you've got a lot of terrific resources and capabilities and people around you as part of the Stagwell family. And David's genuinely one of my favorite people in the whole business. And this was an absolute joy to have you on Great Minds, Sarah. It's a great story. I love what you're doing, and look forward to continuing and follow that journey going forward. It's an exciting one.
Oh, thank you, Matt. It's an honor to join. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
You too.